Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Into Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turned Into Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turned Into Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamien. I play in a band. More information can be found at fuckedup.cc. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic.
It's just, we get fucking crazy.
In Backstage Passport 2, it seems like the alcohol is a bigger problem for you than coping. Like, just like, as far as like a bigger toll on you, I imagine, physically when you're on tour.
Well, no, I mean, I'm doing lines. I don't drink without, there's not coke around.
Yeah.
I just won't drink. That's why that one night I was so fucked up, because they promised me there'd be coke after the show. And I'm drinking and drinking and drinking, and it wasn't there, and I need some equalizer.
Yeah.
I need something to keep me a little straight. And
it's a wild...
When you see me sing that stuff, the wrong words, it's fucking
hilarious. It's amazing. Right? It's amazing, because also I do that all the time, not because of alcohol or not because I can't get drugs, just because I don't know the words for some of the songs.
But. Did you see the bonus footage where I pee myself?
No, I only saw the one.
The bonus footage...
Well, there's two unreleased episodes on the bonus disc. And
yeah, but it's like, there's no real story, so Fuse didn't want to put it together.
Yeah.
Because we were like, we don't want to make up a story.
Yeah.
To make it work.
So which is most of those reality shows are like.
Well, yeah. No one produced it. We gave them the footage, and, you know, they were story writers, but they said, this is what we're going to focus on.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, so it does make sense. You just put focus on certain things.
Yeah, well, I think at that point, you're probably going through all these emotions. Yeah,
Israel should have been an hour episode. Russia should have been an hour episode. There's that much good footage.
Yeah.
But we had to cut it out.
Did
but
you
in
go...
Australia, I hurt my leg, and I'm on stage, and the bathroom is really far, and we're playing Whoops, I Would Eat. And
yeah.
I couldn't walk, and I'm so fucked up, and I just started peeing. And whoops, I just peed, you know. And it's just, you see it running down my leg. Peeing yourself, it's really not that bad. The problem is when you wake up in the morning and you put your shoes on. Yeah.
And they're full of the puddle.
Yeah, they're all damp. And you're like, oh, right, I pissed myself.
See, I never think that's the problem with weed. The biggest problem I wake up with is a sore stomach because I ate something I shouldn't have before I fell asleep. But I guess, like, Mike, I don't know if you've heard any of these before, but I start them all up the exact same way, which is it's all focused on how you got into punk rock, which is I kind of know. Because I'm a big fan.
Like, my story is, I think, different than most.
No, but I know your story a little bit, but I definitely, if you don't mind telling it again.
Yeah.
But so I'm going to start it off the way I always start off, which is, how'd you get into punk?
Okay, well, there's two different things. It's the first time you heard punk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time you go to your first punk show.
Well, I mean the first time you heard it. Like, I think the camp.
Yeah, the first time I heard it, I was at summer camp, and I was probably 11.
Yeah.
And at one of the dances... I heard two songs. One was Beat on the Brat with a baseball bat, and one was Who Killed Bambi.
Okay.
And it was Joe Escalante from the Vandals was a junior counselor there.
Was he a nice counselor? Because, like...
He wasn't my counselor.
Okay. Did you have any...
He was like work crew. Okay. He was like, he got to go to camp for free.
Yeah.
But he had to work.
Okay.
And I talked to him very little, but I was like, who is this? You know, and...
No.
He didn't even tell me what it was. I just knew he played it.
Yeah. What year approximately would have been, do you know?
79.
Okay, so it's like, was he full into punk by this point, I guess? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Was he, no, when did he join Vandals?
82, I think. No. Earlier than that.
Okay. Anyway, go on.
His story about how he got his drum set back from Jack from GSOL. That's incredible.
Incredible.
Well, have you read Jack's book, American Demon?
I've read Jack's book, yeah. Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
It's like, he's one of those people that you read that and you're like, I guess good things happen to bad people.
He was absolutely
he's like a nightmare.
Yeah, and the stories I've heard that not in that book.
Are even scarier?
Well, like, yeah, Lumpy was in, he's dead now, he was in the Vandals.
Yeah.
He was in Joykiller. Mm-hmm. And Jack would make him clean his room at the motels every night in the morning. Clean your room. There's maids. Clean your fucking room.
Just on some sadistic.
And then one day, he said something, Lumpy said something that Jack didn't like. Jack was driving, and he stopped the car, and he went back, and he started pushing his thumbs in his eyeballs until he was screaming, crying. Like, he was fucking poking his eyeballs in.
Shit.
And so when you read the book, I can't confirm all the stories.
Yeah.
But the stories I can confirm from my friends
are even worse.
Yeah. Like in the punk rock movie, Punk's Not Dead, he's like, yeah, we just used to rape girls a lot. Like, Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah. It's horrific.
You're a psychopath.
Well, he thought he killed someone, right? That's why he had to hide in Alaska for a while, like he talks about in the movie, right? And stuff. And so,
anyway. So I heard these songs
at
summer camp. I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I went to a record store, Rhino Records, and I said to the guy, have you ever heard a song called Beat on the Brat with a Baseball Bat? And he laughed and said, that's Ramones, kid. And gave me a Ramones cassette. And then it's funny because I loved it, but only like three songs.
Yeah. So,
and then I also saw a poster.
Only three songs on that record? You only like three Ramones songs?
Yeah, No, I mean, I like a lot more.
Yeah, now.
But it's like, a lot of my, they're not as catchy.
Yeah.
Like, Now I Want to Sniff Some Glue and shit like that. Or.
Carbona Not Glue on the first
one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's a rough listen.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, especially when you're 11 years old.
Yeah, yeah. And the only record I had before that was Rocky Horror Picture Show. And at that, it was on cable.
Because
In L.A. you could get Z Channel. And I taped it from my TV at 10 at night. I had a little rectangular cassette player.
Yeah.
And I just taped it. And that I listened to that record for years.
Well, and you can tell, like, you know, obviously doing musicals now. And, like,
definitely influenced from that. And the words from Rocky Horror, don't dream it, be it.
Yeah.
Those words stuck with me. Well, they still stick with me.
Yeah.
But even when I was like in my early 40s, I still felt like a coward because I was not living how I want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm a coward. It's like I did SM and I do, you know, cross dress a little bit, you know, with my wife, my ex-wife. And, but it's like, I wanted to, like, be part of the SM scene.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to fucking live it. I wanted to do whatever the fuck I wanted to. And I was scared to.
Mm-hmm.
So, those words, don't dream and be it. And now, I'm in a point in my life where I do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, you're like the guy who's living it. Like
I just, exactly flying into Canada yesterday, I had a pink nightie on. and I had, like, some pink restraints with a chain that went to my collar. And I just went through the airport and on the plane, and I don't fucking care.
What was customs like, though?
They didn't care.
They didn't care?
No.
That's why
I own it. I still got my combat boots on, and I don't walk. And I don't have makeup on and shit.
No, but still, when you cross customs, anything to not stick out is what I'm normally trying to do.
What was funny is going to Heathrow, I wore a dress from Sweden.
Yeah.
And that was like a 90-minute customs thing.
It really?
Yeah. That just got kind of a drag.
I saw in the backstage passport too, you get stopped for the beef jerky and things like that. Have you ever had anything where, like, cause I've heard about people going to Dubai with, like, a little speck of weed on their feet and getting busted?
No, I've been fucked. No, I haven't been. Well, one time I went through an airport and got us. I was meeting her because we were going to get out of the Caribbean. And she told me to put a rubber butt plug in me, and I had a cock ring on.
Yeah.
So I'm going through customs, and I beep, and they take me into the room. and the butt plug didn't show up, right?
Yeah.
But what do you have metal? It's a cock ring.
Yeah.
So they have gloves on, and I took it off, and they're holding this thing, leather cock ring with metal on it. And they go, well, that's it. I guess, you know, you can go out now. And then I go out, and the guy who did it was holding it. He goes, hey, I'm a huge fan. Can I get an autograph?
That's awesome. So where do you go from that Ramones tape? Like, you like three songs on it, but you knew there was something about this scene.
Well, I just thought it was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got into Devo
mm-hmm.
and the Go-Go's and Plimsolls and...
Mm-hmm.
But I never saw any of these bands.
Were you listening to K-Rock? Was that kind of like your station?
No, not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
I was young.
So where were you hearing about?
Well, I didn't hear about any of these bands.
You were just like going to the store and just being like...
I know. I only had like
two
records.
But why then would you go like from there to like, oh, Devo?
Well, this is how I started going. This is what happened after that. Because when I was like... I didn't have a record player yet.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a little cassette player.
Yeah.
That was it. So before I started high school, the summer before high school, I was 14. My friend Eddie Mottinger, his dad was president of ACLU for a long time.
No.
Yeah. He goes, let's go see a movie tonight. So, because, you know, in L.A., we're taking the bus when we're 8.
Yeah.
And 10, you go anywhere. So 14, to go to Westwood to see a movie. He's like, you know what? This is Van Killing Joke playing at the Whiskey. Let's go there instead. I'm like, all right. You know, I have my polo shirt on. And I never heard it. I never been to a live show.
Yeah.
And the only punk rock I ever heard is Ramones. And we go in. There's no age limit there. And fucking Killing Joke on.
What venue was it?
The Whiskey.
Whiskey, I don't know.
And I was like upstairs in the corner. And he got in the pit. And I was like, holy shit. It just blew my mind. Yeah. This huge pit and people beating the shit out of each other and this music that I'd never heard before because no one sounded like Killing Joke.
Yeah.
It's like, this is, well, what?
That's a deep end from the Ramones. That's kind of a deep end.
Yeah. And it was the most exciting, coolest thing I ever saw. And like 2 weeks later, we went back and we saw X and the Canadian Subhumans.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, because this is actually one of the few debates that, well, there's a couple debates that we keep having over the years. Mm. And one is British Subhumans versus the Canadian Subhumans.
Well, I mean, clearly the British one are better.
Canadian.
The better.
No, Canadian is better.
They're not better.
They're better.
No, yeah, like two good songs.
Well, like, you know, and a classic LP. Like,
classic LP, but Cradle of the Grave.
I do actually, and I've come around a lot. The British Subhumans are pretty fucking unbelievable and still one of the best live bands. Like,
and stay the same, true to their.
Yeah, and stay the, and never. And like, they are incredible today.
Okay, they didn't blow up the place.
That's true.
But you're Canadian, so you got to go with Canadian.
I have to go
with American,
Canadian.
So I can go with I'm not biased.
No, you're picking. You're like actually the only non-biased. If anything, you should reject England more because you're American. So when did you start playing music? Like, were you already, like, well, I guess, like, no, you and Aaron?
Then it took me, you know, then no. It was like, that, like, 1981.
Yeah.
It was super confusing. Not confusing, but me and my friends would go to see Oingo Boingo, Fear, Bad Religion, Missing Persons,
like I'll get
the Go-Go's, Plim Souls.
Yeah.
That guy, 8675309, whatever his name is.
Jenny 86.
But there was no difference.
Tommy Two-Tone.
Yeah, there was no difference. Yeah. We didn't really know the difference. Mm-hmm. It was all new wave or punk rockers, and they were all playing the same clubs, Roxy and Whiskey. And it was...
Were you going to any, like, Hong Kong Cafe or any of the smaller clubs at this point?
I went to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Madame Wong's.
Yeah, Madame Wong's, yeah.
Yeah. Any place. I didn't go to the Starwood or anything.
Like, yeah.
That's before my age. Before my time. But it was just cool, and it was... Luckily, you know, my parents were never around. Mm-hmm. So I would just go to all hours of the night anywhere I wanted to. I can't believe I never got beat up or raped or anything.
Well, because you talked about it...
Well, that's fucking 14, 15.
Well, yeah, because you talk about... In
my stepdaughter's just turned 16.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Could you imagine that? Go out till 2 a.m.
Going to see Target of Demand on some show.
Oh, we went to see New Wave Theater a few times. That was cool.
Was it a cool experience?
Yeah, because you just bring in your own beer and watch all these bands play two songs.
That's awesome. So, who were like some of the bands that were resonating with you as a kid? Like some of the local bands, I guess, like Angry Simones. Were like
the Dickies were the best band. They were my favorite band at the time. And Bad Religion.
Mm-hmm.
But at my school, Youth Brigade went there. And it's in 34.
But Youth Brigade, they're from Toronto, right? Like, they moved?
No. Well, maybe originally.
Originally, they're from Forest Hill.
When they all turned punk rock, they moved. It was L.A.
Okay, yeah, so.
And the Seditionaries. Like, my school had 13 punk rockers in it out of 3,000 kids. But a lot of them were in bands.
And they're all awesome bands.
And they were all older than me. So it was like me and three other kids were like the freshman punk rockers.
So when was the first time you saw Bad Religion? Do you remember the first time you saw them? Or were they just like playing all the time?
Florentine Gardens.
Yeah.
There's footage of it in some movie where all the kids, like 60 kids on stage, were zipped off.
Oh, is that like a comeback show after Into the Unknown?
No. Okay. That was...
That's way later.
Yeah.
That was
before Into the Unknown.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, you mentioned going to see the Dickies. When did you start, I imagine, seeing the Oxnard? Or were you going up to Oxnard to go to the...
I turned 16.
Okay.
But I would just go to Rhino Records. I would go there once a week. Take the bus there and go through the used record section. Mm-hmm. And that's when I found all the bands. Like Misfits, Walk Among Us. I never just like, oh, this looks good. Flesh Eaters. Oh, this is not good.
Wait, you don't think Flesh Eaters are good?
No, they're not. Well, you have no taste in music.
I have a... Oh, oh, well, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be awesome.
But just whatever looked punk,
yeah,
I would get. And
but you had sonic parameters where you were like, this, by that, because you're talking about earlier, like, you're seeing Killing Joke, you're seeing Plimsolls, you're seeing
X,
and you're like, this is all punk to me. But there were still bands that were like, Flesh Eater's not.
Well, I just didn't like the record.
Oh, you just didn't like it. But yeah, it was still like you were considering part of that world, at
least. Yeah, and I was so hungry for it. Just, that was before I knew about Max Rock and Roll.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to find. How am I supposed to fucking find out about good music?
Yeah, that's true. Like, well, were you checking out? Is there K Rock? You know, you hear about Ronnie on the Block and stuff.
I would listen. I started listening to K Rock every Sunday.
Yeah,
and that's when I discovered Descendants and DI.
What about music magazines? Some people I talk to say Cream and stuff like that. Were you ever into that stuff or not at all?
No. I had like three friends were into punk.
Yeah.
We'd go to the record stores and we'd each buy, like, I remember one time I bought the Agnostic Front 7-inch.
Really?
Yeah. And my friend got the white from Richmond.
Oh, White Cross.
White Cross.
Yeah.
We'd each buy one.
Yeah.
And we were collectors, and then just we'd all tape them from each other.
Yeah.
But we never would buy the same record. You know?
Wow. I think in retrospect, you made out pretty good if you saw that AF 7. It's just like $1,000 record now.
Is it? Yeah. Oh. I mean, I bought Misfits. I bought Bullet for $2.99.
Did you keep all your stuff? Did you keep collect records?
Yeah, I sold a couple. I sold Antidote, and I sold a couple of Misfits 7 inches.
Wow. When did you sell the Antidote? Like recently? Or
no, long I was in college.
Okay.
$100. I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Even though that's maybe the best punk 7-inch ever.
It's really? New York Antidote? That's your favorite, one of your favorite punk 7-inches? That's so awesome. Are you talking
about? Joe, you got a beer or something? Anything?
I'll get you a beer and bring the liquor up here. A bunch of girls here.
Oh.
Get you a glass of water first and I'll leave the beer over.
Anything, buddy.
What's the time check like? I got a bunch of hot girls standing outside.
You know, they go like what, an hour?
Do they can, we don't care.
They want to hear us talk about punk rock and stuff. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'll let them know.
So I guess we were at a point. When did you start playing? Like NoFX Forms before Smelly joined, right?
Yeah. Well, I started a couple of bands. I had a band called False Alarm.
Okay.
And
no one recorded, right? None of these.
No, it was a demo. Max McGall gave us a terrible review.
That demo is that circulated at all?
I don't think so.
I'm there.
Oh yeah. No, someone put it out. I don't know. It's terrible.
Okay.
It was our first recording. We played one show, one party.
Who else played? Do you remember?
No, it's just us.
Okay.
There's like 40 people there, and we got a show at the Anti-Club with Blitzkrieg, and Youth Got Wild, and our drummer's mom wouldn't let him go, so.
You couldn't play?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, we couldn't even drive.
Yeah.
We were 15.
Yeah. It's hard when you're that age, and you want to be involved, but you just don't have the means yet, because you're just coming up.
And so, I met Smelly. I had a Black Flag skateboard, and he was impressed. We met outside of a show. We started talking, became friends. But he lived like an hour from me, and I got band with a guy named Dylan, and he said he started a band with Eric Melvin, and he said I know a bass player. This guy, it's a False Alarm,
and that was how it all came together.
Yeah, and then we only played like two parties, and then we got some other band, and that was like 83.
Yeah. So and then it's like 2 years later, you do the first 7-inch on Mystic.
Yeah.
Like, so what happened in those 2 years? Just playing local shows?
No, parties? We demoed at Spinhead Studios. You know, that's the Little Child.
Yeah.
That's
from there.
Yeah, the guy from Sin 34. We demoed all that. And actually, the drummer for the Germs.
Don Bowles.
Yeah, he produced it.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he came by. He said, if you guys give me gas money.
I'll produce your record?
Yeah.
Were you like a fan of Vox Pop and like Silver Chalice or any of those bands?
No, just the Germs.
Just the Germs.
And Smelly was in Caustic Cause, which they did some things too.
Oh, are they in a comp, Caustic Cause?
Yeah, lots of comps. We started and, you know, we're terrible. I really do feel that we're the most improved band.
Of all time?
Yeah.
I mean, I love those first records.
Well, that's because you have no taste in music.
Well.
You like everything.
No, I don't. There's a lot of stuff I don't like.
That's a Little My Child. That's terrible.
I think that's the thing about it. The energy comes on off. And that first thing that came out was on one of those CD comps in the 90s. It was like $30 when I bought it at HMV. And I'm like, what the fuck is this NoFX song?
Well, the thing is I really think we were, of all the bands around in that time, we were the worst one.
Well, I was going to ask you. Because
none of us knew how to play. I mean, it was just like, we need to start this band. I'll buy a bass. and no one taught me how to play. And
so you're completely self-taught? You never had any lessons at all? Nothing? That's awesome.
That's why I play with upstrokes.
Yeah.
Because no one ever showed me how to play. And luckily I did, because I wouldn't have written that baseline for, like, decline.
Yeah.
Because you have to be an upstroke player.
And I imagine now there's an entire generation of upstroke players based on watching 10 years of fucking up.
Just Joe from Rise Against.
Well, I think that's a perfect example right there. I wanted to ask you, like, did you guys fall into that Nardcore scene? Were you playing with those Nardcore bands?
Well, we became a Nardcore band in 86 because Eric and Eric moved there.
Okay.
I was in San Francisco, but not before then.
Not before then?
But we were big Iller Pugh fans. We used to cover an Iller Pugh song. We used to cover Impact Unit song.
Boston Impact Unit? Yeah. Dickie Barrett from the Boston Band.
the Boston Strangler song.
That's fucking awesome.
We used to cover...
So you were, like, really well-versed in all... Like, you were just, like... Because, like, you talked to a lot of people...
And we were
pre-internet.
We're hardcore.
Yeah, but kids. Like, but you're hardcore.
We covered a Neo song. Like, no one fucking covers
it. Well, I want to get into the Neo's cover because that is recorded too.
Yeah, I know.
Uncredited, I might add.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
And we would cover, you know, FUs.
Yeah,
just like hardcore bands.
That's because awesome.
We're a hardcore band. We're still a hardcore band.
Yeah,
we're a melodic hardcore band.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it is. People call us pop punk. Fuck you. We're not. There's nothing to do with that. Not lyrically. I mean. Most of our songs, like Punk Rock Elite and stuff, those are fucking hardcore songs.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow New York started playing metal, and that got deemed hardcore. But it's not. It's metal.
But there was, like, I was going to say, because you are, I remember
Black Flag, maybe the first hardcore band.
I've also read you talk about the Melvins not being a punk band because they're too metal.
Yeah, they're like Black Sabbath.
But to me, like...
And last time I saw Buzz, you know, a couple years ago, it was like, hey, Mike, you still playing punk rock? Really, Buzz? Sorry if we're successful and you're not.
Well, no, but that... No, well, hey, this is like... To me, it's amazing because I feel blessed that I'm able to like both of your bands. But
I like the Melvins, okay?
Yeah, no, but... Well, because I thought you hated them.
No, I hate them.
Oh, okay.
We played with them when they were banned for 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Novoselic was their roadie.
Yeah.
But, no, it's just...
And they were super fast then, too. They had some faster songs.
A little bit, but he's just so bitter that... They were the band that really invented that sound, and then Nirvana did it 100 times better.
No, I bet. Oh, whoa! This we just go down to debate, but I don't want to start putting my opinion in because there's so many questions I want to ask you. But
well, Nirvana changed everything.
Nirvana did change everything.
Before that, the only hope we had—I mean, we never had hope of making money.
Yeah,
no hope, impossible. If you're a punk band in the '80s, there was no band you could look up to
mm-hmm.
that was making a living. Nobody, you know.
Bad Religion? No.
No, they weren't. No, no way.
Not until later.
They didn't do it until like 89. 88 is when Suffer came out, and they sold 10,000 copies.
Husker doing the Replacements, I guess, would be the closest, right? Like, maybe?
Maybe, but
yeah.
They were, by that time, they were playing fucking total pop.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't punk.
Well, Candy Apple Gray is one of my favorite records. So.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's pop.
It's definitely is.
We're all playing hardcore.
It's definitely.
Even Bad Religion, it's hardcore.
So, at which point did...
Nirvana, you know, Faith No More is the first band where I heard a song, and I'm like, oh, this is alternative. I never heard anything like this. And I'd seen Faith No More at the New Method Warehouse in front of 20 people. So they were like, they came out of the punk
scene. Absolutely. And Chuck was in that band, the original singer.
Yeah,
right?
and when I heard Real Thing, I'm like,
yeah,
finally, something is good on the radio.
So, is that... So did everything change for you when Nirvana happened too, you guys?
Yeah, we were on tour. We were doing the Longest Line tour.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was listening to that record. And from then on, that's when we kind of got good. It was Longest Line. That's when I think our first record.
I love everything, but I think that's where, there's a change. You like the Sonic is where NOFX is.
It's when I sing okay.
Yeah.
Because Ribbed and SMR Lines would be really good if I sang a little bit on key. But I'm so off. But Ribbed, I mean, Ribbed is an original sounding record.
Yeah, that's
when we defined our sound.
Nathan from Waves and I were going to do a whole cover record of just Ribbed.
Yeah, we just did a live version.
Really?
Yeah, we recorded for an album.
I've never seen you do that. I've seen you do Punk and Drublick live. Define live. I've never seen you do that.
And, you know, tomorrow, Longest Line.
Are you doing Longest Line tomorrow?
First time.
I never knew that.
You never played it before.
That is fucking awesome. Oh, I'm so stoked.
I'll show you something that will blow your mind.
All right.
I'm going to release it, but I haven't really figured out how to...
Put it out there yet?
I just got a Tumblr account. I got to figure it out. Put, let me show you this, dude.
Okay. Pause it?
Pause it.
Especially now, people just want to see that kind of stuff, you know? Like, when did you meet Doug Moody, and what was he like? Because he's such a weird character in punk.
The Cafe de Grand, you know, we were there twice a week.
Yeah.
Tuesday night, dollar night. Five punk bands for a dollar.
You had to go.
So we are always there. Exploited one. These other ones for a dollar. You
know? Wow.
Shit like that. I remember once I was at the Cafe. I think we were watching Unity or some bit punk band, not a lot of people there. And I'm with my girlfriend, Tisha, at the time. And she looks over to her right, and Ian McKay was standing there. And she went, ah! She started screaming. And he was like, please stop.
Well, they were a huge band on the West Coast. They had footage of them on the Flipside video. They're playing to like 1,000 people.
I was at that show.
That is a crazy show.
Those are the few bands I got to see. Like, got to see the Mistress 3 times, mm-hmm. SST twice, and they only played the West Coast twice. Mm-hmm. And Mind Threat.
Wow.
See Mind Threat.
That's awesome. So were there any bands that you were on the East Coast that you were obviously like Impact Unit maybe or FUs? Or
FUs stayed at my house.
They made it out there, right? Yeah.
They stayed at my house. And Reagan Youth stayed at my house, and I mastered their first album with them.
You did?
Yeah.
Are you credited on that record as a master?
No, I didn't. I didn't master it.
Oh.
I took them to Capitol.
Oh, okay.
And they didn't have a ride. And they mastered it in mono.
Okay, yeah.
Not the New Red Archives one.
The original pressing, yeah.
Which, I don't know if you know the difference, but
it's like a giant fold-out poster sleeve.
It's amazing sounding. Yeah. Because it's just amazing sounding.
So did you, at this time, did you ever come across America's Hardcore? That's always
been... Oh, I saw them. They're amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. The guy in...
He killed himself.
And one of the dudes from Crucifix was in it or something?
No, it's Drew Bernstein was in America's Hardcore. He was voted Biggest Asshole of the Year on Flipside. Two years in a row.
Oh, is that from the... Did you guys reference that? Yeah. Voted his Biggest Asshole.
Yeah. And then he he joined Crucifix.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's my first punk rock show blowjob. We were watching Crucifix, and I was getting a blowjob under this table.
Wow. Cool. Dehumanization.
Yeah. All right. And then... Drew Bernstein started Lip Service.
Was it screen printing? Did you also screen printing?
He started, but then he started Lip Service. Fucking Lip Service.
Yeah.
And
because you know,
he killed himself last year.
He did last. Holy shit. I had no idea he killed himself. Because he also, Sean, who runs Rockers NYC, he took him in as a kid. And I think he went and roadied for you guys for a while.
Black dude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were besties, and we drove up to San Francisco together.
Yeah.
To see Eastern Front, and we stayed at Drew's house, and I didn't know him that well, but
yeah,
America's Hardcore, amazing,
incredible band.
I wish I could find the demo. I put it on Five Records.
Apparently, someone told me this has been a legend for years. That there's actually test presses of an LP that Mystic did that just never got circulated.
So good.
Were you like? Was he?
And
like,
the singer Danny, he got in a fight with some guy. And it was terrible to watch. He already beat the guy up, and he took a metal chair and just beat him and beat him
Holy
and beat him
shit.
Until he was just like unconscious mess. And, that was L.A.
Yeah,
that was just standard. Just you try to stay away from it.
Have you seen the? I want to get back to that in one second. Have you seen that movie Made, the Vince Vaughn, John Favreau movie? In the first scene, Vince Vaughn's wearing an America's Hardcore shirt
because
one of the guys from America's Hardcore is a set. Dresser
in
Hollywood now and gave him the shirt. And when you watch the audio commentary track, Vince Vaughn talks about the shirt on the audio commentary. Anyway, digression. You bring up the violence that was going on at that, and I remember when you did that Cokie the Clown performance, you talked some insane, horrific stories about stuff you saw back then.
Yeah, I've written songs
about and referencing.
And the violence, it's hard to imagine in punk rock now because it wasn't like that anywhere in any other scene. It was just L.A.
Yeah.
And you never knew when you were going to get killed. And I sang in one band. I mean, I was in one band for a while. And our singer got shot five shots. He lived.
Yeah. At a show? He was shot?
No.
Outside of a
show. He was suicidal.
And wow.
This black dude. Fucking huge black dude. Really nice guy. Took 5 bullets. Lived.
Wow.
And how I got out of stuff, that's why I really do believe that there is some kind of charm on my life or someone's looking out for me because, I have so many dead friends and I always got out of things.
Mm-hmm. I remember you talked in an interview I read, you talked about your friend being stabbed at a Dickies show.
Yeah.
it seems like that would be the last band on Earth you think would have that. Was it almost right.
everything? And Pat Smear and another guy from Vagina Dentata at the time, they almost got beat up by Suicidals.
What?
I was, and Luigi, who was in Suicidal, mm-hmm. the bass player, he was the only guy I kind of knew.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going after them. I saw this group, they were walking towards them because they were in the parking lot. And I was like, hey, Luigi, what's up? He's like, these fucking guys over here. And I was like, just passed me from the drums. And he's like, oh. So.
Wow. So it was just like people that weren't recognized type thing, not local.
Yeah, always said is, where are you guys from?
Mm-hmm.
And we said, from Hollywood. And my friend, I knew a lot of Suicidals. So I was asked to join. My friend Bruno told the guy, said, hey, you guys, this guy's with me. He's good. You know, Eric and I'll do their shirts. Don't fuck with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they stabbed my friend in the lung. So
that's when you decide to move up to San Francisco, I guess, at that point?
Yeah, I was really like, I don't want to quit punk rock.
Yeah.
But this is getting ridiculous.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Had you been out of LA and seen that there were other scenes that were different?
Yeah, I was 16, I went to Italy.
Oh, wow. Did you see shows in Italy?
Yeah.
Did you see like Raw Power and Negazioni?
No, I saw I Refuse It.
What?
Juggernaut. And the Penguins at a basement show in Firenze.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because my dad, he did business there.
Yeah.
And being, you know, he's a shitty dad, he goes, I want to take you to Europe with me. I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, NoFX were together for like 4 months.
Yeah.
But this is his trip. He took me to Florence for a week. He worked every day.
And you had to
have fun.
Yeah, wander around this strange city.
But I ran into an old girlfriend, which is crazy. And I had my Max Rock and Roll. This is awesome. I brought my copy of Max Rock and Roll, and I looked through it, and someone lived in Firenze.
In the classified section, or just like the scene report?
The scene report. And I found it, I went to his door, and I knocked on his door at like 3 in the afternoon. He's like, who are you? I'm like, I'm Mike, I'm a punk rocker from America.
Saw you doing this.
And he goes, come on in. And, you know, I taped records, he played me a bunch of cool Italian bands, and he goes, you gotta come see my band tomorrow night, we're playing a basement.
What band was he in?
He was in I Refuse It.
Is this what I from I Refuse It? That single.
Stefano Bettini.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was how cool punk rock was back then.
See, and I always thought, you know, you guys had an adversarial relationship with Max Rock and Roll because of I'm Telling Tim. But, like, but you got along with Tim really well.
Yeah, but you do realize that Fat Records is the only label
that never got banned, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I knew that. Yeah.
And Tim, before he died, he told Martin, he goes, don't ever ban Fat Records unless they
do something
to a major or something.
Yeah.
But I'm so proud of that. I really am.
Well, that's and that magazine, that going places, you know, you mentioned how Nirvana changed everything. You know, that magazine must have helped being in that magazine, getting around there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you guys for this, but I used to book all our tours.
Yeah.
I'd go down to Mission District and buy a stolen credit con card number, and I'd spend like 4 or 5 hours in a telephone booth.
Just book tours. One band I forgot to ask you about really quickly back in LA.
There's one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
He said, had I ever been anywhere?
Yeah.
I took 2 road trips to San Francisco.
Okay, so you went up there and you saw the scene there.
Yeah, and it was just awesome.
Yeah.
When I moved up there, that's when all the skinheads were there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it wasn't as scary as L.A. still.
Yeah, it's not the gangs in L.A.
Yeah, and that's when I stayed at Squatch. And,
Did you live at the Bats or anything? Or?
No, I just stayed at Squatch.
Okay.
I went out with some girl up there, and actually one of the girls who went to my summer camp, which was Galani, was in the punk scene.
Oh, that's awesome.
She got beat up so bad by this gang called DMR, this girl gang,
okay,
that she quit the punk scene.
Wow, that's horrible, that part of the story, I guess. But
I never seen such
violence?
Bad violence against women.
Was that in
women
San Francisco?
Women.
That was in San Francisco, yeah. Right? Well, you hear about the D.C. scene, too. There's that woman that ran the main skinhead gang in D.C. that everyone's terrified, that everyone talks about, like a brutality. And I guess it just anytime someone's vicious.
Well, D.C., I mean, Brian Baker's told me so many times. He's like, dude, we'd go to New York just to beat up people.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, we all PC, but we all wanted to fucking fight.
Yeah. Well, they were jockey dudes. It was like a more jockey, tough, like American-y type scene. I don't know, yeah. Not to disparage your country or anything, but what about Scared Straight? Did you ever see those guys?
Yeah, we toured with them.
You toured with Scared Straight? Yeah. Wow. And you know, like, the connection between, because you also toured with Subculture a couple years later.
Yeah.
And you know,
in 85, we toured with Scared Straight and Entropy and the Grim.
Wow. So is that your first tour with Scared Straight?
No, our second. No, third. But what was interesting about that tour, and I don't know if this has ever happened before. Okay?
Okay.
I go to college. Mm-hmm. We'd done our big first U.S. tour.
Yeah.
And then we were going to go on tour on Christmas break. But we didn't have a drummer then. And Eric Melvin made some friends at his high school. Mm-hmm. So he got a singer and a drummer for NoFX. And we booked a tour. So we have two new members. I've never met them.
Before the tour starts, you never met them?
We went on tour without rehearsing. And I've never met these two guys. I don't think that's ever happened.
No, I don't think that's ever happened.
Ever as a band?
Maybe in like a boy band or like a major label rock band. I could see that. But like,
no, they would have rehearsed.
That's right. They probably would have had to rehearse.
We didn't rehearse. We just show up at the first show. And I'm like, nice to meet you, Dave. Scott.
How'd you work on a set list? Was it just through like telephone?
Well, Melvin and those guys.
Yeah, at practice.
At practice. So they learned the songs. And then we play our first show. And we're playing with the Grim, Entropy, and Scared Straight. And, you know, when you're in a band, you think you're good.
Yeah.
And we're like, man, we're good. But even then, we're like, man, all these other bands are better than us. And we never practiced before. And our singer was so nervous. He just stand there, like, didn't even move. He never sang for band.
Yeah.
Right? He was his first show ever.
It was his first show, too? Ever?
Ever. He never sang for band before.
Why did Eric Melvin? Why did Melvin think
this? He was a coke dealer. And,
and no friend.
Anyway, it was so weird. People like, people who we knew were like, who are these guys?
Because you'd already been through some of these places, too.
Yeah, yeah. And like Texas, we were headlining a show at the Twilight Room. Oh, yeah. You know, like, fuck. And we were so bad that the crowd turned on us, and the skinheads, and the owner had to bring out a shotgun. And he shot at the roof. Everyone get out of here.
Did you guys ever record any? Did that line up record?
That line up never recorded because our singer, we got home and he got in a car accident and died right away.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear that.
Weird car accident. Just in a nice neighborhood. He just kind of turned over his truck and no one called. He was there for like 2 hours. So,
wow.
So he died. If someone would have called the ambulance.
He would have been safe.
Okay. But we were going to kick him out anyway. So.
Wow. That's a horrific story. But I guess that's why also probably that lineup never played at the NoFX anniversary show.
Right.
We had all the different lineups come through.
But it's like, we went on tour, never met each other, and we were fucking terrible.
What did the other bands think?
Because our first tour, I sang.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
yeah,
this other guy's singing.
What did the other...
And he didn't say a word between songs, which, you know, yeah, unlike me.
What did Scared Straight and Grim think? Were they like, what are you guys doing?
I don't know. It was so weird.
But you know, like, Brian Walsby, the drummer of Scared Straight, formed a band with a singer of Subculture called Double Negative that I think you would probably fucking dig. You know?
That's when we were on the freeway and we got hit by a truck.
Okay.
Truck driver fell asleep.
And just took your...
Just bashed our band.
That's in 10 years of fucking up. You talk about that, right? So, when does Vassal?
Colossal Wassel Records.
Colossal Wassel, that's it.
A Wassel's a party of drinking.
Is that your label?
Yeah, it's my label.
Okay, so like, but that's a precursor to Fat. You did the 7-inch, and then, the 12, the yeah, liberal animation. Yeah. Who was that band Drowning Roses?
Oh, they're just a German band that, how we got to Europe is Adolescence had a tour. Uh-huh. And this guy booked it with Drowning Roses and Adolescence canceled. And we've been calling the guy asking for a tour for like a year. And he goes, I just had a tour. They canceled, so I'll give you their slot. And he'd seen us play at Gilman Street. This guy, Dolph, from Trust Magazine. And he'd seen us play, and we got out there, and we played our first show. And he's like, I thought you guys were a lot better.
That's Europe, right? That's your first taste of the European honesty, I guess, right?
Yeah, and he got in a fight with our guitar player right away. and we were. We were terrible. And band... We did so badly that we started having Drowning Roses as headline because they were better. It was so harsh. And Dave Pollock, who books us now, he said he was at the same show at Gilman Street. Uh-huh. Him and Dolph were totally drunk and had a good time at our show. And he goes, I want to put any records out here. So we sent him our new record, Humorous, You Can Suck on This.
Yeah.
And he wrote back, he goes, I'm sorry, but I no longer want to put your record out. I know I said I did, but then I heard it.
I heard it, and now I can no longer back this band. My friend's
That's
band,
messed up.
My friend's band went to Europe the first time, and people bought their 7 inches before they played, and after they were done, they were like, I want to return this. You don't have to give me your money back.
It's my
money
back.
I just want to give it back to you because I don't like your band. Well, Mike, I could go on forever, but we'll move on quicker. That's S&M Airlines on that single, right? Split. But that's when you know, I've heard you say that's your first good song.
Yeah.
That's when you guys think.
Yeah, that single, it's not a very good version, but I think that's my first good song.
So when did, and there was a shift there. Like, and I'm,
that was my first hint into that I'm into BDSM.
S&M. And I meant to ask, was that for, and also I guess PMRC Can Suck on This has kind of an S&M feel to the sleeve too.
It's from my magazine.
Oh yeah. So were you into S&M at this point, or is it still just playing with the idea of using S&M?
I did stuff with my girlfriend, but I mean, it's my sexuality.
Yeah.
Which people don't believe, and I don't know if they ever will, but my sexuality is just as valid as being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just as genetic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to ever prove that. They'll never put K for kinky in with the GLBT transgender.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we look at all those cars. Cops. I used to look at my...
Urban reality.
Yeah. I used to look at my mom's porno magazines. Or her boyfriend's.
Yeah.
You know. She had one called Cocks and Cunts. You know, pretty graphic. Just like people fucking.
Yeah.
And Penthouse and Hustler. And I just...
Rabbit.
I didn't get a boner.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. And I read a story in Penthouse Variations about a guy being submissive to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I got like my first full boner and the first time I jerked off. And it was like, when you're fucking 11 or 12, nothing happened to me in my life
mm-hmm.
where that would be a turn on for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a neglected kid. I whatever.
I'd kiss girls.
There's no trigger. Yeah. I was never punished.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm more comfortable being in a submissive role sexually. You know, I like for women to fucking ravage me
mm-hmm.
and bondage and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and it doesn't,
it's some nature, but it's some nurture. It's mm-hmm. a little bit of both, like everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, human sexuality is, if you could choose what you were into, I'm sure a lot of people would make different choices than what they've been given. And
right.
I think maybe now we're in an era where people are becoming a little more accepting
totally.
Of it.
Yeah, you know? And maybe that's why I'm so out now.
Well, were you, because that's what I was going to say, were you out then? Like, were you
No? No, I was so scared. I was doing it.
Yeah.
Since I was 18,
mm-hmm.
I'd been, you know, doing bondage and, you know, whippings and all that kind of shit. I wouldn't date a girl if she wasn't into that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I have regular just, you know, missionary sex as well.
Yeah.
But
it's something different.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been with Soma for 6 years, and it's always something new. Like, we never repeat. It's always something fucking new. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got such an imagination, and we always talk about crazy shit. And me and my ex, we had a dungeon in our house, you know, mm-hmm. that my kid didn't know about because it's a secret.
How do you have a
secret dungeon?
I need to build a secret room for all the records I don't want my
kids to see.
I'll tell
you how. We bought a house that was built in 1931. And there was a room for prohibition.
Yeah.
There was a secret.
A rum room.
Yeah, but really secret. There was a cabinet opened a small stairway, and then you have this killer awesome room on the top of the house that no one would know was ever there. So, yeah.
The one thing I will say about S&M Airlines is there's kind of that introduction more metal-y leads. On that stuff.
Yeah. We had a guitar player that could play a little bit.
The licks and stuff. And that seems to be something that... Did that... Were you ever in conflict with them, being such a punk person? Or do you like metal at all, or...?
Actually, no. I like Ride the Lightning, okay?
Yeah.
But I just heard Kill 'Em All the other day. Wow, it's so terrible. It's amazing how terrible that record is. I had friends used to play me Exodus and...
Well, you're in Bay Area, too, when that stuff's happening.
Yeah, and I was just like... Yeah, listen, it's like punk. I'm like, no, it's fast, but it's terrible. It's stupid. So, yeah, not into that.
So when you move up to San Francisco, you play, you know, the farm, mm-hmm. New Method Warehouse and stuff like that. Did you ever, were you like seeing Neurosis, playing with Neurosis, playing with...
Yeah, we used to play with Neurosis all the time.
Yeah, playing with those bands.
Violet Corrosion, which is the band before that.
Yeah.
Christ on Parade, we used to play them a lot.
So was that like, how did you guys go over in that scene? Because it seems like a lot more serious.
We never went over well. I mean, nobody left us anywhere. Mm-hmm. Really. I mean, we could not draw 50 people anywhere.
Could you draw better in Europe before you could draw in America type thing or no?
No, our first European show was terrible. No one liked us. I mean, the thing is, we were really bad. We were a bad band. I mean, like, RKO is putting out Rock and Roll Nightmare, and we're putting out Liberal Nation. You know, it's like, SNFU and RKO were the two bands that were like, these guys are so much better than us. We'll never get that good.
Bring up RKL, because that's a band I really wanted to talk to you about.
But Bad Religion put out Suffering in 88.
Yeah.
And that was when everything changed for me. I'm like, right, duh. I grew up in L.A. This is good punk rock. Good melodic hardcore punk rock. And then I listened to that record probably 100 times, figured out how to do harmonies.
And that's when you added the harmonies from Bad Religion?
Yeah.
Misfits have harmonies, though. But I guess they're more like...
harmonies. They have woes.
Woes, so you're right.
Not a harmony.
You're right. So, with RKL, was that a band you guys played with? Like, they were heroes to you, I guess.
Yeah, we played them.
And stuff, but you would have played
them. I used to roadie for them. I used to drive around.
Yeah, like, why do you think they never caught on in a bigger...
They got huge in Europe. It's just they were such fuck-ups. I mean, I think they're the only band in the world. When they were doing one of their records, Bomber was a street hustler, so he used to suck cock to make money to buy crack. And Jason had two prostitutes working for him. They'd be on the street so he could get money for heroin. So the band had an actual prostitute and a pimp in the band while they were recording on Epitaph. And I don't think this ever happened before.
No.
You know, and Bomber was just so funny about doing that. He's like, hey, I'll see you guys later. I'm going to suck a few cocks, make some money. And he was just so open about it. It was fucking hysterical. Wow. He was the first guy to come in our scene that came out.
Yeah. And
then his boyfriend won the $50 million lottery.
And
bought him a house, a condo on the beach. Doing good. He had a crystal meth problem. The doctor said he had a small heart attack. If you do crystal meth again, you'll probably die. And 6 months later, he tried it again. He died.
Wow.
And Bomber was the biggest musical genius I've ever met. Absolutely fucking genius.
Do you still think they're probably the greatest band to kind of come out of the Nardcore kind of...
Oh, yeah. I mean, NoFX would be here if it wasn't for them. Mm-hmm. And, but you can't live like they did, you know, just, they would always bring acid to Europe to sell. They put stickers on their amps and there'd be a sheet of acid under the stickers. And, you know, they're all junkies and, just crazy. The guys were that crazy and they were that good.
Well, another band that had insane, terrible stuff kind of come out of their legacy is Fang, and a band that dealt with acid, I guess.
I played in Fang.
You were in Fang?
I was a 32nd bass player. 32nd member in Fang. I played one party with them in Philly.
Like, early on.
Joe was getting a tattoo. So
you had to go?
Yeah. We were hanging out. We used to do shows with them all the time.
Yeah.
And they go, Mike, can you just fill in tonight? I'm like, all right, I'll try.
Because there's that story in Gimme Something Better where you talk about running into him at a party after he gets out of jail. And being like, I can't be your friend. It's like,
I can't talk to you. Yeah. I'm an asshole for life because I killed my girlfriend. I was like, well, yeah.
So do you think in punk rock, like, what do you think brought all these troubled people? Obviously, broken home situations, various things. But, like, then there are people like yourself and you know, not saying that you don't still party but have a good time, but you figured a way to kind of do it.
Well, I didn't try drugs until I was 32.
Probably at what?
And, you know, went to college. Never did school. I always did well. And I was a responsible guy. You know, all the guys in NoFX, potheads doing acid, and somebody was a junkie for 6 years. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for me, we would have broken up for sure. I held everything together. And just, it needed to be that way.
And then you got, at 32, you felt like you kind of surrendered some of that, I guess?
Well, I'm like, me and my ex were like, we're millionaires now. Everything's going really well. Why don't we try drugs? But, you know, that's what we're going to tell our kids.
Yeah.
Like, don't do drugs until, especially, you know, your brain develops, you're 28. And I didn't know that at the time. But my mom always said, you're too smart, Michael. Don't do drugs. Mm-hmm. As she's fucking smoking joints. You shouldn't do drugs. And I didn't.
So you never got into weed even? Or not at all?
I tried weed like when I was 21, but I don't really consider that
drug, yeah.
Doing drugs, because I didn't like it. And I did acid once, but... Yeah, that's like kind of experimenting. I did it once, it was great. I actually started using drugs regularly when I was 32. But I tried coke at 32. I tried ecstasy at 34. That's late.
That is late. Well, then I still have time. Actually, I'm past those dates now, so I can't get into it. But were you... Did you ever have... Because I guess you never had guilt, punk rock guilt stuff, because you've always been, at least from the outside, what I've read, kind of okay with success and finding success in punk rock.
Well,
as
yeah.
As long as you do it ethically.
Well, yeah. I haven't, you know, any band on Fat Records, any band, any person, no one will say they got fucked up. They got fucked over. No one.
That's true. It's like the only...
Because you can't fuck over one person, ever, because then you have a reputation. You ruin all the fucking good things you've done. So that's why, you know, I never lie and I never, I'm really honest and wouldn't fuck anybody over. I've lost tons of money on bands. Even I could, you know, legally, I could make my money back or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want anyone talking shit about me.
Is that what it is? It's kind of like you think in punk rock, it's ultimately your reputation is what?
Yeah, my reputation means everything to me. And what's funny is that I'm known as such an asshole in circles because I think I'm successful and happy.
Mm-hmm.
And punk rockers don't like that.
Well, there's also... You also have a very different sort of interaction with fans sometimes.
I don't think so. It's
the
like,
amount of Mexican kids that wanted to punch you in the face.
Yeah, I never met them before.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's like from maybe not many people that know you necessarily, but I'm saying like from the outside.
No, I mean... You can be a capitalist and make money without fucking anybody over. But there's just so many people that aren't like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why bands keep coming back to us. Face to Face are coming back. You know, Less Than Jake came back.
Yeah.
Lots of bands come back because they're like, you're the only label that we ever made any money on.
Actually, Mike, funny you bring up Less Than Jake. When Vinny was on this podcast, he told me that he actually tried to get on Fat Records before.
Yeah.
And he got a form rejection letter back saying, don't ever call us again.
No, it never said don't ever call us again.
He said, there's a box that he said. This is from him. Episode 30.
Yeah, well, tell him to show it.
Okay.
I never listen to all those things anyway.
No. Okay. I
only listen to bands when someone I know says, listen to this band.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, speaking of listening to the band, did you pick the bands on the label? Like, did you know the sound that you wanted these bands to have?
I picked every band.
Every band. And, like...
But, like, a few bands. Like, Against Me, I hadn't heard. Someone brought them to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I love this. But no one signed a band.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the Fat Records package that Fucked Up sent? Way back when, didn't you listen to it?
Yeah.
Fucking Floyd.
You may have given it to me. I wouldn't have signed you guys any of your songs too long.
This is back when you liked us, Mike, when we were supposed to do a split together. Remember that? South by Southwest?
Yeah, why are your songs so fucking long?
Well, because there was a little record called The Fucking Decline, and it happened to change all of our lives when it came out.
Yeah, but
in the late 90s.
All the parts are interesting.
Well, ours, let me tell you.
Hey, I like your band.
Doing okay.
I like your band. Okay. I mean, cool songs, but I like, you know,
well,
2.5 minutes is how long a song should be.
Well, let's jump ahead.
Did you see that symphony thing? The Decline Symphony?
No, I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen that?
No.
Have you seen that? It makes me cry every time.
Well, that...
A 50-piece French orchestra did Decline. It took them 6 months to figure it out. It's fucking amazing.
That's incredible. Well, because that, I will say...
I didn't even know about it.
Can you YouTube it?
Yeah.
Right now? Pause.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, we can... Well, afterward, we can do it. But we'll wrap up soon, I promise.
No. I just, you know, spending as much time away from my clothes as possible.
Okay.
So I'm in my club.
Okay. Well, I promise we'll wrap up.
It's still good.
The nerdity will be over soon.
But I saw this thing. Some guy says, you should check this out. And it's amazing. And I was so sad because I wish my mom or any of my parents were around to see it. Because how many bands have fucking a 50-piece orchestra done one of your songs?
Well,
without money, we didn't hire anybody. And it took them 6 months.
But that Decline, if that was in any other genre of music, that would be heralded as like an achievement of modern music, I think. It's just because it was in punk rock that it wasn't regarded
that's why
in the same
that's
way.
Why I am so working on this musical so hard, because I'm not regarded by anyone outside of punk rock.
Mm-hmm. But I think you will be. You know,
I will be after this.
I think it's like one of those things where, but it's also like, you know, when people go back and like, and cut to what NoFX was, and it's like this incredible catalog of awesome songs that are you know, this song Decline pushes that to the most extreme point. And where did the idea for that come from?
Well, just, I mean, Cradle to the Grave of the Subhumans.
I always thought
that was great.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to do something like that. And it was a lot of parts that I had left over. I went through all my old tapes. Oh, this is cool. I never made this into a song. So I started to put them together. And I just obsessed. And I just tried to make it better and better and better and better. Even when it was done, it was about to get pressed. And I said, stop the presses. I need to put in this keyboard part at the end. You know, that da 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 da. And I made the ending more interesting. And the bell. And the manager at Fat Records yelled at me. Yeah.
Really? Because he was like, it's not punk? Or
he's like, it's coming out. It's going to fuck up everything. I'm like, dude, this is my art. It's like, I just thought of a cool part that's not in there.
Yeah.
And after he yelled at me, I said, come to my office for a second, dude. I'm like, have I ever yelled at you? You just yelled at me in front of everyone. Why would you yell at me? You know?
And looking back on it, you were kind of valid. That's a great part in that song. It's
the ending is important.
Yeah. It's good that you brought that in. Was that, like, you played it live a bunch of times, I guess? Like, I've seen you do it in New Mexico, saw you do it in Toronto one time and stuff.
It's fun.
It's an amazing song. Why did you never want to do any other long songs? Is it because you don't think, because you've done one long song?
Yeah, I like 2-minute songs.
And then, what about 30-second songs like the Fuck the Kids 7-inch? Yeah.
Well, it's true. I just, I taught the band and we recorded that whole thing in one day. Kind of came up with the lyrics on the fly and it's cool.
And there's a bit of CanCon on there. There's a Neo's cover.
A Neo's cover,
which isn't on the CD reissue.
Well, neither is Three Ships to the Wind.
That's true. But why, so Neo's were a big band for you as a kid?
I love the Neo's.
Did they make it to California?
Yeah, but that was such a crazy album.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how big the Victoria Punk scene was. How many bands came out of there?
Well, just the West Coast of Canada in general. And it's funny because, like, there's no...
Fucking Beyond Possession. Man, we finally made it up to Vancouver in 85, and they wouldn't let us bring our equipment over, so we lugged it in some apartment, made it over, made it to the show. Can we use your guys' equipment? Nope.
Beyond Possession?
Yeah. So we didn't get to play.
That's funny because they took the Melvins.
They would not let us fucking borrow their shit.
They took the Melvins on their first tour. And so it all comes back to this. I guess it's like historical beef.
It's so weird.
When bands do that?
Well, let's use your fucking amps?
Yeah. It's weird. It is weird when bands do that. And also when bands get really worked up when you ask them to use their amp and they're like acting like you're asking for a kidney or. You
know, DRI, was like our 10th show, and we had our drummer forgot his hi-hat. And he asked Felix. It was Felix's first show in DRI, it was in 84. Before dealing with it.
Yeah.
And we asked him, can we please borrow your hi-hat? Because we have no hi-hat. He's like, nope. Fuck. So it's hard playing without a hi-hat. He's using the cabinet.
For short music for short people, did that idea at all come from the Blur comps?
No.
No? Because Spaz is on that too, right? You know the Blur comp, the Spaz comps.
They do. No, I just, it's such fun. Who has that short songs?
Well, Mike, I could go on for hours more, but I want to let you get on with your night. And
okay, nice interview.
Dude, this has been awesome. And want to do part 2 one day? A couple years from now?
Yeah,
part
2. I love interviews where people know what they're talking about.
Well, we didn't even get into some of the stuff I wanted to get into, but we can say that for another day. Daryl, thank you so much for this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Daryl, I'm going to put this on. You guys can check it out for a second.